You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with The New York Times and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Welcome back to The Takeaway. Todd Zwillick with you today. The Sentencing Reform and Corrections Act, that was one piece of legislation that seemed to have a good chance of passing Congress this session. But time is running out, and chances are getting slimmer and slimmer that anything will get done on criminal justice reform, certainly before the summer recess that's coming up. It might be a missed opportunity for the proponents of criminal justice reform, and also a missed opportunity for conservatives who've seen their ranks grow in favor of reforms on tough sentencing laws and incarceration. David DeGan is author of Prison Break, Why Conservatives Turned Against Mass Incarceration. He says the current embrace of prison reform is being led by conservatives like Newt Gingrich, who've been able to gradually convince other conservative peers that it's time for new thinking.
The genius of the conservative strategy was to link people's fear of rising crime to the anxieties that many white Americans felt about the decline of segregation, about the integration of neighborhoods, about school busing, about racial change. The notion that we could crack down on lawbreakers was linked very much to racial anxieties, in some cases, you might say, to racism, and it became a way to tap those fears. A big part of the story was that liberals were simply too weak to do the job.
So we're at a moment now, however, in politics where criminal justice reform is very much at the top of the agenda. And it's not just the liberals who want to have shorter sentences. There are traditional law and order Republicans, former law and order conservatives, sometimes self-described, libertarians, people from all over the right who seem to have had a change of heart about the advisability of mass incarceration. What's changed?
Crime is just less of a problem. It's still a major problem in the United States, but violent crime in particular is down significantly from where it was in the late 1980s and early 1990s. And people have, it has registered with the public that the streets have become safer. That trend has opened up much more space for a discussion of alternative approaches than was available when people were just scared. The second major trend is a change within the conservative movement, and that is a shift toward the libertarian wing of conservatism. So they've gone from seeing law enforcement as the unquestionable defenders of civilization to being a bureaucracy, as they say in one of the cliches of this movement, just bureaucrats with guns.
And also budget crises where governments are strapped, and maybe if libertarians are on the rise and Republicans are wanting to cut costs, prisons are a great place to look.
Austerity has certainly given conservatives and liberals as well a prod to take a harder look at prison budgets. But there is a genuine ideological change occurring here. And in fact, some of the most important reforms that got this movement started happened before the recession of 2008, before the really biting era of austerity.
So we've talked about the ideological and we've talked about the practical, the budget cutting. What about the moral case? How has the moral perception of mass incarceration changed on the right?
It's changed substantially, and the credit for much of that goes to the evangelical wing of the movement. And I think in part we can see the conservative turn on mass incarceration as the product of an alliance between evangelicals and libertarians. And the most important player in this was a guy named Charles Colson, who had unquestioned conservative credentials. He was, in fact, a hatchet man for Richard Nixon, ended up going to prison for his role in Watergate. But emerged a born-again Christian and dedicated the rest of his life to ministering to prison inmates. And over a period of decades, he won a tremendous amount of respect. And Colson really pushed evangelicals to start seeing prisoners as people, people who were fallen, people who could be redeemed, people who needed the help of those on the outside.
So David DeGan, let's talk about the politics of the moment for a second, because there is criminal justice reform legislation that's in play right now. It may get done this year. It may not. Either way, it's going to be limited. So looking forward for the next year or two or three, how durable is this change in conservatism that you're talking about? One can see a scenario where the pendulum starts to shift back.
I think it's helpful to think about that question by distinguishing between the state level of policymaking and politics and the national level. conservatives in the last 10, 15 years have consolidated their control of many states, in particular in the South. Those are now bright red, solidly red states, in which conservatives don't really get much utility out of attacking Democrats because they're in charge and are, in fact, responsible for the problems of governance. And it's in those states that you have seen rather aggressive movements to reduce the prison population. That's the good news. The bad news is that, as you point out, the national climate is shifting in ways that could give state politicians pause.
So do you buy the argument from advocates that this is the politically opportune moment for criminal justice reform, and if it doesn't happen this summer, the opportunity could slip away because Obama won't be president anymore and the conservatives could bolt? Do you buy that?
That argument has been made in order to push federal legislation, which has been more and more diluted as it's progressed through Congress. And advocates are still really hoping for a win on a federal bill that would reform the federal prison system. Now, it's worth noting, again, that 90% of prison inmates in the United States are held by the states, not by the federal government. So this is a bill that targets federal criminal justice operations. And advocates have indeed been arguing the window is closing. I don't know if I do buy that. I think, in fact, there's a risk that passing a bill now provides a very juicy target for Donald Trump and for critics like Senator Tom Cotton, who are very much in the spotlight at the moment, to attack the cause of criminal justice reform more broadly as the product of a left-right cartel in Washington. I think this might be a moment to take a break and give the states more time to work on this policy and let the conservative movement regroup. After the Trump moment passes, as it may, if he is not elected president.
The history of law and order conservatives and the transition to modern reformist conservatives in criminal justice reform. The book is Prison Break, Why Conservatives Turned Against Mass Incarceration. David Dagon, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we are talking ballot initiatives and the whirlwind of direct democracy later this hour. It raises a question: what issue should never appear on a ballot for you, the voter? From Deer Park, New York, civil rights issues like voting rights, districts, issues of race, class, or gender equality. You leave those topics to the people, and the bigots show up in numbers. Remember Proposition 8.
My name is Amy. I'm calling from Bedford, Massachusetts, and I thought gay marriage should never have been put to a vote. It's a basic human right.
Can you be trusted as a voter with ballot initiatives, or should you leave it up to the elected officials to cool the saucer? 8778-MY-TAKE is the number. You can comment on our website at thetakeaway.org.
Support for The Takeaway comes from Staples, offering printer ink and toner cartridges for home or business printers, and in-store print shops that can create customized presentations, booklets, and manuals at Staples stores or staples.com. Staples, make more happen.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.